and welcome to Crit Club, the podcast where four friends watch movies from the Criterion Channel streaming service that none of them have seen before. I'm your host, Angela, and with me as always is Corey.
Hello.
Peter.
Hi there.
And Wizard Chris.
Hello, hello, hello.
It is the event of the season. Today we're watching Trish's Wedding from 1971, directed by Milton Myron. It's a spoof of the real-life White House wedding of President Tricky Dick Nixon's daughter, made by a cadre of drag queens named the Coquettes. Dedicated to Divine herself, it's a film not for the faint of heart. It's a fantastic movie to watch to get a sense of what queer freedom looks like, especially in light of other queer films we've watched over the years. But what will Corey, Peter, and Wizard think of the film? Will they be happy to be an invited wedding guest? Let's find out. Do I need to share why I picked this movie before you guys share, or shall we wait?
Yeah, why did you?
Oh my God, yeah, why people. Did you? I picked this because I wanted something colorful and not black and white and not super long and not made in Europe. And I was like, this clicks, checks all the boxes. Let's just go with something. We needed a change of pace. So I thought Trish's Wedding was a real change of pace, and I would happen to agree with that assessment. Oh, I'm picking Peter to go first.
Yeah, this was a tough one because this really didn't click for me, I think. And it was hard for me to not, let's see, I have like two competing thoughts because it was very difficult to not watch this and not think of Multiple Maniacs, which we watched in one of our earliest episodes, 1970s Multiple Maniacs. And I loved Multiple Maniacs, and I still do. Like, I still think about that, and it still makes me like laugh and smile when whenever I think about that memory of that movie. Whereas this one, like when you get away, it also reminded me of the 20th century, the surrealist, you know, speaking of like the history of a country and in one moment, the Wizard's own 20th century sort of reminded me of that as well. And this was, but the thing with this one was once you got away from, you know, the casting and the spectacle, it kind of felt like somebody doing a topical stand-up routine that you had to be really up on the events of 1971.
That you had to be a really, boomer for.
Yeah, that you had to really, but like not even, I mean, because I imagine a lot of people who were alive then probably don't know half of the sort of references that were sort of like doled out, I think. I mean, there's just a bunch of stuff where I was just like, and I have a history degree and I feel like I have a pretty firm grounding in the Nixon presidency and a lot of the things that transpired during that, and I was just like, this feels like very topical stand-up for that time. That I'm not saying it hasn't aged well, I'm saying it just you kind of had to be there or having to be living it at that moment in order to fully appreciate a lot of the things that they were giving. And I'm a person who doesn't like to read a bunch or look up a bunch of extraneous material about a movie before I watch it, because I feel like it should stand on its own as like what it is. And I feel like this movie for me didn't do that, just because I felt like you had to know so much context. I mean, there was plenty to enjoy about just watching a bunch of people. They looked like they were having a great time, and I was happy that they were having a great time doing it. As a movie and as like an artistic experience for itself, it just didn't connect super heavily with it. Yeah.
Fair, fair. Wizard, what did you think?
Obviously I thought about Multiple Maniacs multiple times. I did not think of the 20th century, although I wish I had. I like...
With all of the casting, exactly. Just like the surreal sort of in it and say...
Yeah, and the sort of like capturing like the insanity of like the political class, I guess, something like that. That's fun. I have to agree with Peter in the sense that like I just wrote down on my notes, I was like, this is like a Mad Magazine, this is like reading a Mad Magazine issue from 1971. I'm like, oh shit, I bet, you know, they're really sticking it to that Spiro Agnew guy, like really
foot in his mouth.
Wow.
it's pretty good.
and it's funny, and I love, it's like snarky and super fun, and it's an interesting piece of film. But yeah, I, so many like so many of the jokes are like about celebrities of the time, and like, yes, I know who Eartha Kitt is and she's great and fabulous, but like it doesn't do anything for me, I guess, you know. This is spoofing an event that happened like that same year, and everyone's like, and the Cockettes have come together to make a joke out of it, and it's a funny joke, but it's very much a joke that was funny in 71, and for me looking back, it just doesn't land quite so well. I do love like the sleazy LSD orgy at the end. Great way to end any movie. Strong recommend.
Why not?
Well, now I know what it means when someone says, oh, that shit turned into a real Trish's Wedding.
Oh, I've never heard that. I've never heard of any of this. I also never heard of Trisha Nixon's wedding. Like, this was all new to me.
She's the eighth presidential daughter to get married at the White House. I watched the C-SPAN coverage of Trisha Nixon's wedding from that year.
Nice.
Oh, and by the way, Ted Roosevelt's daughter, who also got married in the White House, she was like 98 years old and she was a piece of work, and she was also at that wedding.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that Nixon had a dog named Checkers because we learned that in school.
I knew that.
But I didn't even know he had a daughter. So.
What a strange thing to learn about Richard Nixon. How many other presidential dogs?
I think he used it in like a political ad or something like that that was important or something.
I knew about Checkers. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, there was some sort of
news. Yeah, the Clintons
story.
Had Sox the cat.
Whoa.
The Clintons had Sox, yes.
All the proof you need that they're globalists, no doubt. Cat in the White House? Shocking.
So, Corey, what are your thoughts on Trisha's wedding? Did you want to be a guest at this party?
Oh, for sure. But I wouldn't have been invited. I'm not nearly as important. I liked this. So I grew up with Mad Magazine, and it's funny that Wizard, you know, mentions that. You know, I would go around with my mom to like antique stores, and she would like go antiquing, and I would go and rifle around and try to find, like, through the magazines and stuff, try to find old Mad Magazines. And like, literally, that's how I learned about American history, is reading Mad Magazines from the 50s, 60s, 70s. It's how I got to be pretty good at like Trivial Pursuit, like the original version that came out in like 85 or whatever and stuff, because I knew a lot of the stuff from Mad Magazine. And that definitely reminded me of this. And I think part of it is like, I don't know what I'm missing with this, with all the references. Like, there could have been things that were going way over my head that I had no idea what was going on, but I felt like I kind of like knew what most of these people were and like all that stuff, just from my sort of like knowledge of, you know, the 70s and stuff. I think that there was a lot of like, there were a lot of like little subtle things that were like funny in there that just like made me laugh and chuckle and stuff. There was one point, I can't remember who he was supposed to be, but in like the yellow dress or whatever, he was like messing with something on the setup, like shooing away the person who's just like, you know, sort of very half-assedly shaking the broom. And he's like, who makes these things anyway? Senator Fulbright?
Hey,
I don't know. Like, that's
like that senator from
Arkansas. Yeah, he was like a Blue Dog Democrat who started the Fulbright Scholarship Foundation, all that stuff. So when you hear someone called a Fulbright scholar, it was like him and stuff. I don't know. I thought that was funny. It made me laugh. Like, there was when like Barbara Streisand is getting interviewed, and she's just like, and he's like, are you still seeing whoever? She's like, oh, I don't know.
Pierre Trudeau, Canadian Prime Minister.
That's right.
Pierre Trudeau and Barbara Streisand dated.
I believe.
Oh, okay.
20th century. I believe who was featured in
20th century. That is William Lyon Mackenzie, different Canadian Prime Minister.
Same. They're all Canadian.
They're all Prime Ministers. Right. It's like God Emperor and Warhammer. You just sit in the chair and enact the will of the country.
Yeah. Is there much depth to this? No, not really. Like, is there a like, you know, big overarching plot or anything to like, I really not. I think it's all pretty, you know, surface level, like lampooning and stuff like that. What it really reminded me of is the long running review in San Francisco, Beach Blanket Babylon, which also started in the early 70s, like 74 or something like that. And it was this big review, and they would like have musical, and it's kind of based on a fairy tale of like Snow White and stuff. But she would go through all the different like modern pop culture references, and they updated it over and over again throughout the years and stuff. And it ran for many, many decades into the 2000s and stuff, as they would just continually update the performances and stuff. So it really reminded me of that. I could see this film very much and these you know, actors and performers very much coexisting in the same San Francisco that gave birth to Beach Blanket Babylon. I don't know. Like, I also thought that, like, you know, if teenage Corey had a VHS of this, like, you would bet that he would be, like, bringing this to parties and showing it to people and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, definitely.
Look at the crazy stuff our parents' generation made and stuff, you know? So, I don't know. Is it true? Like, I don't think this director, this, you know, person, I don't think he made too much other stuff. I only sort of very briefly, like, you know, looked into it. But yeah, I kind of wish that, you know, he would have kept going and kept making stuff or whatever. So,
fun fact, I am 2 degrees of separation away from the director. He used to work for Bill Graham as his, what the hell is this background on Zoom? What is that? I don't even know what happened. Anyway. I am two.
Listeners, balloons just floated up around Angela.
It was at the mention of Bill Graham. So
Bill it was Graham. The mention of being two whatever's away.
2 degrees of separation. Let's see. Two does degrees, it do again?
Thank you. Yeah.
He used to work for Bill Graham in the in billing, and my mother-in-law used to work for Bill Graham, mm-hmm. Doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So I was like, oh, weird connection.
What did you think?
Yeah. What did you think?
Oh my God. What did you think? I needed this kind of absolute silliness in my life so badly. I was laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. Like, I found all the reasons to cackle. I got some of these old jokes because I'm originally from New England. There were so many Kennedy jokes. All the Kennedy jokes. But I mean, some of it, I think some of it doesn't age well. No, it was fun. I laughed. I needed the laughs. I laughed at the senator thing. I laughed at Rose Kennedy asking if this was a funeral a bunch of times.
Yeah.
It also, I was like, are we making fun of old people? Are we kind of like doing Asian
the
brown
old establishment face? Though? Yeah, don't trust anyone over 30.
Yeah. All of that stuff. And it was just sort of refreshing. And I did not see it coming when someone poured LSD into all the punch and it like totally degenerated into a complete orgy with, like, you saw all the things. There was dong, there was pussy. And I was like, I didn't know that my parents may have partied in this way. And that was a bit of a, oh my, maybe not. I don't know. Or at least my parents' generation. I didn't want to know.
I mean, yeah. San Francisco in the 70s, yeah, and like just even the sort of porn that they were putting out, like it was bonkers, off the wall stuff.
But you enjoyed it.
I did. I had a good time. I didn't need to look up all the things. I wish I had found the C-SPAN thing, but I did find a New York Times article. I wanted to know if all of the people listed as invited to the wedding were actually invited to the wedding. And so, no, Queen Elizabeth was not at the wedding, which I was like, Queen Elizabeth at that wedding seems a bit far-fetched.
Prince Charles was there, though, right?
I don't know. Not even that. Like, Billy Graham was like the big name. At the wedding, which I was like, if that's the biggest name,
the Pope Prime wasn't Minister there? Of India, probably one of the least like respectable parts of the whole thing, where someone was, I think, was just obviously doing an affectation of an Indian like accent and stuff on it.
Yeah, well, and also, who was the head of Israel back in the day?
Golda Meir. For this,
yeah, that I was like, some of this, I don't know if it ages well, but it also is sort of representative of, you know, like, sure, we can make jokes about this because we're white people, which is kind of an interesting thing to see in retrospect. But one of the biggest takeaways for me was just the extent to which we were able to have free speech in this area, and, you know, watching stuff like the Blue Caftan made me realize like how lucky we actually are in terms of being able to have the simplest things in terms of like expressing queerness and being allowed to be a queer person in society. And so it just feels like Blue Caftan and Trisha's wedding are at like two completely opposite ends of a spectrum of queer experience, of being having to hide yourself or, you know, sort of celebrating queer culture. And that's why I think it's actually an important movie to see. It kind of provides a bit of context in that regard. But it's only a 35-minute movie. I don't know that we're going to have, like, a ton to talk about here. But it was still kind of a nice reprieve and something different to talk about.
Go ahead. I thought a lot about just comedy in general. Again, because I feel like, you know, for me, the spectacle of the whole of the thing didn't carry too much water. I still love it. It's great. Great to see. Always happy. Because it did look like they were having a fucking blast. And I do think that that carries, you know, I think that that like adds a lot of energy to whatever you're watching.
Yeah, for sure.
But I really think I was like focused a lot on like how really different and more nuanced and complex, for better or worse, like comedy has like progressed since around this time. Like, I feel like this is like not too far removed from like an episode of Hee Haw or Laugh-In or something of like, you know,
where it's just like a YouTube video. I could totally see just a bunch of young kids making a YouTube video where they're making fun of all the modern celebrities and stuff. Yeah.
Well, because everything was so such a monoculture, even though this is so counterculture, like still like the jokes and the, you know, the mythos around specific people, around, you know, the Kennedys or, you know, the Eisenhowers or whatever like that, are also just like monolithic in their representation. I thought a lot about just like humor and you know, lampooning, punching up in what that looked like. And I thought a lot about old things I used to see of Laugh-In or Hee Haw in these same ways, which like it was very interesting how parallel I found this in the humor depiction of it, except this was also with a bunch of drag queens and queer representation, which was not typical of
Hee Haw. Yeah, it's funny how it can kind of follow the beats of like what is standard like political like television humor at the time, and yet be so transgressive as to be like an extended drag performance, whose major theme is fuck Richard Nixon, I guess, which I will never get tired of saying, and is, you know, a popular subject, I would think, in American cinema.
Which was a foregone conclusion. Like, they didn't need to give any reasons about why to fuck Richard Nixon. It was just, you know, it was, there's no reason to, I mean, everyone knows, it was like the world knows why people would deeply want to make super fun of this man.
When you picked this, I thought that it was actually going to be Trisha Nixon.
Like a documentary. Like, I have no idea who it was.
But I thought it was going to be her. Like, I thought it was going to be like, a, you know, a Ron Reagan Jr. type thing where it's like the child grows up to like hate their parents and hate their politics and so I don't know, I was expecting that to be like acted by her.
So you must have been absolutely delighted to see that at all.
So yeah, so it turns out that Trisha Nixon Cox is a piece of shit, and her husband is a he is the president of the New York Republican Committee for the GOP or whatever. So he's a piece of shit.
I like that the movie digs so hard into like the just like wretchedness of this kind of coverage, because it's like it's a movie about the coverage of the wedding, right? Like, it's done in this way that's like it's a television channel like covering the wedding. Like, I was watching some of the actual wedding on C-SPAN, and it's this opulent, like, absolute, like Americans should be outraged every time someone has a wedding in the White House. Like,
that's the point. That is the point. And there have not been any other weddings at the White House since. And I remember I talked to my mom about this. I asked her one day when I was a kid, I'm like, why doesn't anyone ever get married at the White House? And she like got super mad because she hated Nixon, hated that Trisha Nixon got married in the White House and used those public funds for her benefit. And how rude is that? Now, keep in mind, my mom was also super pissed because she believes that the Clintons took everything out of the White House with them.
Like the China? When
they
left.
And maybe they did. I don't know. But she is still mad about it.
No, I firmly agree with that. Those are public funds that should not be at all spent for those personal. But I really appreciate that aspect of it, because there's something that really strikes of monarchy about a lot of this, you know. And I mean, like, it's, I was, you know, we were, Wizard, you just asked about people getting married. And I was like, oh, because it reminds me of like the, you know, Charles and Diana wedding. I was like, wait, but that's a monarchy.
It's a royal wedding.
That's all this thing, you know. And that is really, really striking to me about this, just the historical significance about this. Also, one of the things that I learned from watching this and kind of reading up a tiny bit about it was I did not know that, what is this? I did not know that, like, Nixon's daughter was married to the grandson of Dwight D. Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. Like, that's sort of alluded to in there, and that's when I went digging for it. Like, I'm not saying anything new, but like that's a pretty fucked up sort of, you know, ruling class, crazy intermarriage breeding bullshit.
Yeah, these like political classes like coming together to pat themselves on the back in what is ostensibly the people's house, all that good stuff. Like
I'm glad that no one's gotten married. No one should get fucking married at the White House. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's pretty terrible.
Before that, people would get married outside of the White House and use the exterior grounds for reception. I think, and I might be wrong, I think this was one of the first times that the actual White House was used as a location.
Well, one of the things I learned, just sort of like, you know, I don't really know much about Eartha Kitt. I know she was like Catwoman and a singer. So then I looked her up, and I guess there was a incident when she went to a luncheon with Lyndon B. Johnson was president. And she basically had this like little tirade or whatever, where she was like, Johnson was being just some like, you know, old man yells at cloud. And she's basically like, look, the kids are not being hippies for no reason. They're not rebelling against nothing. They're doing this because basically like all of the stuff that you're doing to this country is like making everyone like go crazy and sending them to war and like all this stuff or whatever. It's like they're not doing this for no reason. She apparently made made Lyndon Johnson cry.
What?
Yeah, apparently he burst into tears. And then he systematically destroyed her career by getting her a dossier on the CIA, and they spread around rumors and or maybe some like unearthed, you know, truths about her and stuff, and like calling her just like this sex pervert and blah blah blah.
Good
and basically ruined her career in America, and she then shifted her focus to overseas and stuff like that. So yeah, that's a little story about. And it took like a couple like investigative journalists, like Pulitzer Prize investigative journalists, to like uncover all this and find all this out.
Damn.
So.
Never forget.
Yeah.
Never forget Lyndon Johnson.
Not great people.
A president who would take out his abnormally large penis just to frighten people during the business of being president.
Yep. And Eartha Kitt would made him cry.
People contain multitudes, and that's what I love about this podcast.
True.
Is every week we sit down and we learn how complex and strange people are.
How many penises we watched that week?
You know, we should start keeping track. Should we add this to the spreadsheet?
The
like how much genitalia we see?
Yeah.
This is what easily.
Oh, that's right, because you missed the bush that was in
Hour of the Wolf.
That was in Hour of the Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll send you the screenshots I took.
No, thank you.
Just kidding.
Joyous.
If I never see that film again, it'll be too soon.
No, it was so artful. Wait. What else is this movie trying to say anything beyond what we've discussed? Like, is this a movie that is?
I mean, maybe.
Like, if I were like 19-year-old Chris and my friends put on this play, I would be super proud of them, and I'd be like, "Wow, this is so amazing, and you guys are so talented." And I loved the LSD orgy at the end. And what it has to say about politics, really sharp. But now as 37-year-old Chris, I'm like, well, I don't know. Is there more? Is there more we can take from this?
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm having trouble judging this as a movie, even as a short film, I think. And I think you hit on exactly what I'm thinking about it. Like, I, for a real brief time in my journalism career, at the very beginning, I was a theater reviewer, and I just covered a lot of theater and just did a bunch of like back alley productions, one play sort of things. And I got this real appreciation of theater as a very immediate art form, as like a very immediate thing to like, oh, we can talk about everything that's going, because it's like super quick to produce it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just get people, you get some blocking, you memorize lines, you can make a play in like a week or something. And it felt like a very like, I'm exaggerating, but for some of these plays I reviewed, you know, not too much. But like, it really just felt like a super immediate and very like culturally aware and you know, headlining sort of thing. And this really strikes me as a real solid one-act play that if I were to watch at that time, I would have fucking loved. But as, like, even a short film, that's why I'm having trouble finding the meat beyond watching people have fun making fun of people they hate.
Who are dead now, for the most part. Which is the problem I really have with it. Trouble connecting. I'm like, all these people are dead. What do I care?
I think Streisand's still kicking, right?
Okay, not everybody.
Streisand is still around. Streisand, that's true. She just released a huge biography, too, like $46 worth of biography. Memoir.
She's had her dog but also twice.
Oh my god, really? Yeah. To be Barbara, huh? Did anyone notice how gross the fingernails were of the guy at the beginning?
People all looked so unhealthy, and that was the first thing I noticed was the fingernails. Oh,
I was having a problem there. I was like, oh god, no.
Very much same. Oh, very much same.
Definitely those.
If I do one thing right as a parent, it's going to be making sure that my children actually like take care of their nails. Oh my god.
Definitely the look of like an independent theater troupe in 1971. And like, you guys need to eat better. Like, what's happening here? This is not good.
Floss.
I want to know how drunk or on acid these folks were, really, at the end part, if at all.
You know, but like the whole movie has a sense of people being on acid. Like, I don't know, like it's shot and made with this like gleeful abandon. Like, there were not multiple takes on any of these things. Like, if the dude playing Nixon was on acid for the whole film, he could have been, and he hides it well.
Does he?
Well, you know.
No, but people were looking at the camera. People were waiting for people to say cut. It all felt like a one-act play.
Okay, if you could give this movie an award, like a made-up award, what award would you give it? Like, best blah, blah, blah.
I'd give it the 1971 Halton Film Festival Best Film. Halton Film Festival, that's a small student film festival where I'm from. I would give it to those guys because this is great.
I would give it best satire of a president's daughter's wedding at the White House.
Best use of acid in a movie.
It's the honorable Fuck Richard Nixon Award.
I would say best use of a teddy bear in a movie.
Wow. I was trying to think of something for the teddy bear. I like the teddy bear.
Like, is that beyond just being very funny?
That was
Is
Checkers.
That grounded in anything? I don't know. I wish it were 1971 again.
Teddy Roosevelt, maybe? I don't know.
So, I guess that brings me, who is this for? Why is it on the Criterion Collection website? Because it's something that we kind of, always...
But it's not in the collection,
No, it's not in the
right?
collection, but why? Who is this for? Why did they make this? And
it's historic. I do think it's historically rich.
Yeah,
like I do think, you know, in the same vein as Multiple Maniacs, that's I think why I'm having such a hard time is because Multiple Maniacs seemed not only such an important movie for 1970, such a mind blowing thing that actually was released in 1970. Like it was also to me just a crazy enjoyable movie. Mm-hmm. And this just seems in that same vein as being very important for people to see that in 1971, this type of art was kicking.
I didn't realize this came out after Multiple Maniacs. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Now.
Well, it seems like someone wanted to make a movie that was more outrageous than Multiple Maniacs. I mean, the Rosary Job seems quite tame in comparison, honestly.
I guess. Really? Well, Trisha Nixon did get fucked with a baseball bat at the
yes!
at the end of this particular cinema event.
It was can we take it to another level? And they did. And I mean, and in full color. This wasn't, masked by any black and white. I'm sad.
Black and white actually helps Multiple Maniacs.
You hate black and white now, Angela.
I just hate long black and white movies made by European men. Yeah, that's a long time. Long time. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just don't see, I don't see myself represented in those movies. They can be hard to relate to.
That's fair.
Not that I see myself represented in this queer film as much. I mean, even though I'm a queer person, like, I'm not necessarily a drag person, and I don't particularly love theater. I just like crazy, weird shit, and I love drag queens.
I kind of see myself in here, at least in the fuck Richard Nixon aspect of the film, yeah. And I think I see all of us in this like little slice of irreverence. I don't know.
Yeah, if my friends were making this movie when I was in my 20s, I would absolutely tell me what I have to do.
Well, but I think that's also what my sticking point is, Corey, because I think of also me in my 20s or my teens, but me right now, I'm like, if I were, I would let's add a little bit more. What else can we do?
What would you add to it, Peter? What would have put
structure.
It?
Structure would have been good. A plot,
conflict.
Kind.
Conflict, maybe.
Maybe some conflict.
Yeah, it felt like a stand-up routine. Mm-hmm. It really felt like a laugh-in.
Yeah, which is funny. It's because under a lot of different contexts, I would be saying the exact same thing that you are, Peter. That I think those criticisms sound like something that I would normally say. But I don't know. For some reason, this one I just thought it was cute. I just thought people were really cute.
At that end. Oh, sure, absolutely, I totally agree. And that's that's why it's difficult for me because I'm trying to think about this. Okay, but what do I think of it movie wise? Short film wise, whatever. Mm. Because at the end I was like, look at them having a great time and they're just having a fucking ball, and I was very happy for them. And but from movie perspective, it's what else are we doing?
So what would you say in our current times could use a thorough spoofing by the Cockettes?
I think this is also, I hate spoofs like this. Like, this seems to not humanize. I think this belies some of the seriousness, or in making light of something, I think it gives some of this bullshit a pass. Now that I'm thinking about it, this was some monarchy ruling class level nonsense. And I feel I don't know, at least in this day and age, I don't want shit spoofed. I don't want the last president, jabbed and, having a stand-up routine about him, because that seems to
than a stand-up
lighter.
Routine, though. Trisha Nixon has to live for the rest of her life knowing that someone spoofed her wedding where she gets fucked with a baseball bat. I would have a hard time, no matter how high up in the ruling class, it would not bring me peace to know that that existed out there. And I think that actually this level of absurdity and trashiness takes this ruling class down a level. And it's actually a politically important thing to do.
Okay.
But I agree with everything you're still saying, though.
Yeah. I mean, I am at a point where that doesn't make me feel like that stuff right now doesn't make me feel like, we got him. That'll smart him, I'm sure.
I keep going to that Don Draper in the elevator meme where he's like, I don't think about you at all. Because that's kind of like Trisha Nixon doesn't think about this. I don't know how this got brought to the channel. That is a story that I'm very curious about. Because this is an interesting piece of historical clowning on the powerful, and I would love to know whose idea it was to be hey, let's record this for posterity, but also someone was like, let's get this on the Criterion Channel. This is something that people will want to see. And I agree, it's queer cinema. It's taking place in a post-Multiple Maniacs world where I'm sure a lot of people are the key is to be as manic as hell. Which this movie does very well. I just have so many questions about it that don't get resolved by watching it.
Angela, I want to know if you have an answer to that. What is deserved? What current state of affairs is deserved of a Trisha's Wedding level?
Oh boy. I'm having a hard time answering that question myself. Because it is the level of spoofing is intense, right? And in some ways quite distasteful. And I agree with you on some level that it belies the gravity of what is actually happening. I would maybe some Supreme Court stuff, I think, is worthy, especially the extent to which it looks like we have corruption on the Supreme Court. And like that, maybe some of our Supreme Court justices have been bought and paid for in some ways, especially in the ways in which they are seemingly refusing to have oversight and or, you know, they're like, no, we're above the law. It's fine. I would love to see a completely irreverent, trashy thing about Supreme Court justices right now. What else?
I would really love a workplace. I would enjoy like a drag workplace comedy about the going ons at Twitter. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Just for kicks, you know, it could be equally trashy, but it all takes place in the within the walls of X, formerly known as Twitter. And it's
or Tesla,
and it's about people.
Matter.
It's about people melting down. That's it. That's all I got.
The FTX stuff also might be worthy of a takedown because, like, oh man, that was a big mess, and probably did have orgies involved.
Nice.
LSD fueled ones at that.
Nice.
So it's like not that much of a jump. What else? What else would there be?
This is all really terrifying. It just makes me hate the ruling class more and more all the time.
I'm trying to remember if I like what happened to me that I don't appreciate political humor, if I ever did. I'm sure I did. I just like, yeah, I think I've moved away from all of that in a way where I it feels so, I think especially over the past like 7 or 8 years, it's felt really self-gratifying. And very like masturbatory in its own way of like, ha ha, yeah.
I mean, and I don't think I would like something like this now. I think if I, you know, saw something like this now, I'm not going to be very entertained by it. But like, I don't know, knowing that this was made in like 1971 and it's made by a certain generation at a certain point in time and all that stuff, I think it, you know, I think it's interesting. But I don't know. It makes me think of like, did you ever watch like Some More News on YouTube with like Cody Johnson?
It's Some More News is
one
great.
Of my favorite YouTube channels and stuff. And like, that's all political all the time. And it's also just like some of the legit funniest comedy that I've ever seen. So like him and his team are like absolute masters. So, I don't know. I don't think this exact photocopy of this type of, you know, over the top satire is going to translate anymore, but like, for the time and the place, like, I mean, this is a snapshot not just of you know, the political arena, but it's also like a snapshot of like the, you know, quote unquote hippies and the sort of countercultural movement at the time and stuff. And so, I don't know. They were breaking ground.
That's true.
I feel like this kind of stuff has split into two different things. We have the Hump Film Festival, which kind of shows, you know, completely unleashed sexuality, and then we
have
also...
we all been to that?
I
think we all have.
Oh yeah, multiple times.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we also have RuPaul's Drag Race, which actually makes not nearly as irreverent, but irreverent spoofs of all kinds of things all the time. And so it was kind of interesting just to see how tame RuPaul's Drag Race is in comparison. And I think that is where I heard the Trish's Wedding reference, actually, like,
oh fun.
Yeah, but
I did think of Hump well, of course, at the end of this I was like, ah,
there we go.
I definitely agree with you, Corey, of like time and play. As much as I am having trouble connecting with the movie, like, I definitely have so much respect for it. And I mean, Chris, I would say it belongs in the Criterion Channel just for the sake that it existed then.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this existed then, and I'm glad I now know that this existed then.
Like uncovering a forbidden book in the bowels of a arcane library somewhere. You're like, ooh, I didn't know this was here. And then, yeah, that's how I feel about it. I'm like, oh, I didn't know somebody made this. Of course, I also didn't know that Trisha Nixon got married in the White House and a bunch of other stuff. But now I've learned so much about the Nixon presidency that I didn't know before.
Does anyone happen to have the year that Nixon fucked up memorized?
1974?
Right. I thought it was a little bit later.
That's fun,
so
too.
Like, this is all pre-Tricky Dick. He was just a dick.
I mean, yeah. Because, I mean, 72, he won in the biggest landslide, I think, since like the 1800s or something. Like the landslide he won with electorally in 1972 was enormous.
Wow.
You know what, that's...
like, I think there were like two or three states that went blue.
That's another fun aspect of this movie is that if you watch the... first, if you watch the C-SPAN coverage of it, and then you watch this movie, and then you watch him resign, you're, like, enjoying this really beautiful thread of, like, a man on, like, the best day of his life just getting more and more dumped on until finally he has to quit.
No, the next year was great. Next year, 72, he also went to China.
Hey.
Bridged that together. That was crazily monumental.
Well, and also yeah, his cool trip guy. To China brought the pandas to Washington, D.C., which coincidentally today the pandas left Washington, D.C. and went back to China, and there is no agreement to have pandas back in American zoos.
You know what this movie's missing? It's missing a drag Kissinger. And the more I think about that, where is Kissinger during all of this? Was he not invited? There was no drag Kissinger. There was a Indira Gandhi, but no drag Kissinger. That's outrageous. That is fail. No question.
No, that was the sequel that they never made. You know, the secret love affair between Tricky Dick and Henry Kissinger.
Oh my God. That would have been a great subplot. It's like Kissinger's not invited to the wedding because you're this weird, creepy, wonk dude that no one wants to hang out with. So Kissinger's trying to like...
Wait, Wizard, I'm finding that really charming, though, now that I'm thinking about it, because I think I was asking for like substance or any sort of reason, and this definitely eschews any sort of global politics, like the war at Vietnam, which was still raging on at this time, like all of that stuff in favor of Agnew with a foot in his mouth, like in favor of like these real, like, you know, just for lack of a better word, pardon me, bitchy, like slams on people, which feels very still alive and well in drag culture. And I think that's pretty charming.
And that is, that is a great point. Yeah. Like if these are not pointed, like cutting political, there's not even anything about like Nixon's stance on like queerness or anything like that. Like it is pure making fun of like red carpet trash, which is super endearing.
Oh yeah. My God, the Georgia senator.
The Georgia senator is about the most on the nose. Political commentary.
That's funny. That is funny. Like it isn't. There's nothing other than it's about political people. There's like obviously there's something inherently political about it, but content wise, this is.
It's just irreverent. It's just, a reverence is like, you know,
a couch party with your friends bitching about who looks good and who doesn't. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
All right. I like that connection. Thank you for helping me make that.
Got there.
Just went a point up in my estimation.
Well, speaking of points.
Corey's done.
Yeah, we're done here. I think I was just going to say, anyone else have anything else to say about their time at Church's wedding?
No drag.
I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I know it exists.
Thank you for going along for the ride. It's only 35 minutes. I know it's a bit untraditional. It could have been called on shenanigans, but we did not. So thank you. So on Crit Club, we rate films a little differently than we do on other podcasts. We don't rate to 5 or 10. We go all the way to 20 in honor of the Dungeons and Dragons polyhedral 20-sided die. And of course, nothing else on the show has anything to do with Dungeons and Dragons, but that's okay.
I like that more and more every day.
It's just because we're a bunch of nerds and it's okay.
Yeah.
So I can't remember because I'm perimenopausal and my memory's shot. So I don't know who I asked to go first. Okay, Peter, what's your rolling?
It's 10. It's just another 10. It's a 10. I think that's a solid 10. I was thinking 8, 9, but that last little bit, that's my biggest connection of just like, oh yeah, this definitely still shows a side of that, of this subculture that's alive and well and kicking. And it's hard for me to judge this as a film instead of what I think it is like very active mind, like I think what, like immediate, yeah, the immediacy of this satire I think is so important to its appreciation for me. While I wish I could have had that, I still absolutely respect the hell out of it, and I found it charming that so much aspects of these and this art was still was happening then and it's happening now. Yeah, 10. Thank you.
You're welcome. Who was it? Who was second?
I believe I was second.
Okay, go for it.
So,
go for it, Wizard.
Spiritually, no Drag Kissinger means it's a critical fail. Like, as a piece of satire, as a meditation on the Nixon White House. But as a movie, I didn't even realize it bothered me until just now. But as a movie, as something, it's an 11. I had positive feelings about it, and it was fun to watch. It was very fun to watch.
Corey, thoughts? Thoughts? What you're rolling?
I mean, I'm rolling as what I think, 20-year-old Corey would want to rate this, and like someone who just sort of fresh off.
Listeners,
some...
Corey is 24 years old right now. Don't let him think that he's still that young.
Just reading so many like Mad magazines, and like I could totally see us, you know, watching this at Peter at like Steve's apartment or whatever, you know, and just like cracking up about it and stuff. So that was the kind of charm that I got from this. And so I don't know, I felt like a 14 on it.
Hey.
Like there's not a big plot anything here, but I enjoyed my time with it. So Angela, how about you?
I'm so thrilled you rolled a 14 because I was feeling a 13, and that's, I think I'm sticking with it. I enjoyed it. It was a breath of fresh air. I think it was way ahead of its time. It's refreshing for me to see. And I recommend that you all watch it. And maybe if you do, you could let us know on one of our many social channels or email, we're Crit Club Podcast on Instagram, and also you can email us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com. We actually have mail this week. Any guesses as to who messaged us?
Which makes it seem like we know the person.
Is it my dad?
just go ahead.
My dad finally writing
us,
in.
You should just tell us.
I'm gonna read. No. It's Frida. Frida messaged us again, which was so kind of her. I did not expect that or see that coming. And so thank you, Frida. Would you guys like me to read the letter?
Absolutely.
I'm not.
As
I
long
might
as there's
least,
no squares in it.
Y'all have been really tearing it up. So many good episodes. I really loved your Hour of the Wolf episode and found myself talking back to the podcast along with you. I didn't enjoy watching that film, but it had a huge impact on me. The Addiction episode was also great listening. I didn't enjoy that film at all, but the cinematography was delicious, beautiful. So it had merit, but hot damn, that script was blithering, faux, profound 90s garbage.
Yes. Agree, Frida.
Something I learned at Burning Man this year is that people are funny. They don't tell you that they're listening, looking, consuming what you have out there, but they are. It's kind of like, don't wait until you're on your deathbed to tell someone you love them thing. And simultaneously, it seems to be human nature in so many ways. I'm willing to take 5 minutes to tell you, but for every me, there's probably 10 to 20 folks who just can't get it together. But you're definitely not posting into a void because I talk to others about your podcast and I'm not your only fan by a long shot.
Aww.
Did us the favor. Do you remember maybe an episode or two ago, I was Frida messaged us and I wanted to know what the other two podcasts were because we're her third favorite.
All right.
Which is a great vaunted place to be. Frida has excellent taste. And the other two shows are All the Answers with spiritual healer and comedian Katie Rubin and Cassidy Brown. And you must remember this with Karina Longworth, which is also a film podcast, but more of a history.
Great podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Corey, you've talked about that one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She thanks us for doing what we're doing because we bring her great joy.
You do the same to us, Frida. Thank you.
Indeed.
That's very, very kind.
And she sends us all much love and we send it on back. So thank you, Frida.
Wow, listeners, that could be you. You could be.
I think this is probably my second favorite podcast. Yeah.
What's your first favorite?
Knowledge Fight. Knowledge Fight's a great podcast. Strong recommend. You have to listen to a lot of Alex Jones to like enjoy Knowledge Fight. You gotta be down.
You're really selling
you
it.
You gotta be down to listen to people make fun of Alex Jones, but it does involve hearing a lot of Alex Jones, which can be problematic if you have neighbors, for example.
Yeah, right. They might think worse of you.
Exactly.
Right in, listeners, and you can be heard with your letter.
Yeah, tell us what you think. Yeah. So again, you can message us on Instagram at Crit Club Podcast or on our email, critclubpodcast@gmail.com. Who's up next? I believe it is a Corey movie. What are we watching next week?
So I'm going to take all of the time that we saved this week by only watching a 35-minute film, and I'm going to bank that, and I'm going to put that into... I'm really sorry, guys, but I'm going to pick Inland Empire.
Yeah, I want to watch it. Oh, you give me a reason to watch it.
David Lynch's 3-hour long, almost on the dot, 3-hour long, surrealist, weirdo, crazy film. I guess it's the last film he ever made, too. The last.
Wait, he's never making another film. He's just going to do weather reports.
Yeah, no, he's still alive, and he did, Twin Peaks season 3 and all that stuff. But this is his last theatrically released full length film.
Wow.
So he's done other short films and all that stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, no apologies. Like, I want to watch this, but also I'm not going to do it without a push like this.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What's the reason you want to pick this?
Because it's the only David Lynch film that I've never seen.
Straight Story.
Yeah, and it's in the Criterion collection, and I saw it on the thing, and I was like, okay, this will literally be the last opportunity that we can have to discuss David Lynch as a whole on this podcast, because it's the only one I haven't seen. You have seen Straight Story, or you haven't?
I haven't.
Okay. Well, then let's just wait till my what else you watching, and I'll talk about Straight Story.
Ooh.
Okay. I guess it was last year, maybe like last summer. For some reason, I got really fascinated with the phrase Inland Empire. Do you all know what that means? I'm not sure.
Isn't that the part of California that is like Southern California?
East of LA.
Yeah.
It's like the like not the valley. It's not technically called that, right? Or I don't know. Like I was like, I am fascinated with the sociological cultural history of LA in general, and like the sprawl out east there. I think has like a lot of. I was reading a really interesting book called The City of Quartz, which is about the sociocultural history of Los Angeles, and it like. Talking about like the Inland Empire and the sprawl out there has like it's just very fascinating and like has led to a lot of very fascinating.
I don't think there's going to be a lot about that in this.
That's fine. No. It's like there's something very evocative about the phrase Inland Empire to me.
Sure.
So yeah, that's all. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like Riverside, San Bernardino, and like Joshua Tree and all that.
Is this going to be like the cinematic equivalent of a Red Hot Chili Peppers album where I'm like, oh, cool, it's another song about California. This is going to be great.
Do they live there?
Who? What? Oh, them? No.
No, they're Minnesota year round.
Ride or die cheeseheads. That's Wisconsin, folks.
All right, so that's what it is next time. Inland Empire. Buckle
be
up.
Ready for a much longer episode next week, everybody. So now,
but maybe our listeners are into David Lynch and they're going to watch along with us, or they're going to listen a lot. Yeah, it's going to be great.
And maybe we'll even get another letter because that was fantastic. Thank you.
I'm excited. I love David Lynch and I have a lot to say about him. So
So now it's time to find out what our panelists have been watching besides what's on the Criterion Channel. Wizard, what you watching?
Ooh, Wizard goes first.
Yeah, I can't remember anything anymore.
So I have slid off of Baldur's Gate 3 because I have started playing Cyberpunk 2077. It's super fun.
Oh, that's worthy.
It's a very fun game, especially as it gets colder here in Toronto. I'm looking for a nice place to take a mental vacation, and Night City has everything you need, baby. Yeah, lots of fun first person RPG. I really feel the RPG parts, and like it's just kind of a fun world to walk around in, so loving.
Did you play it when it first
came out? No, I bought it on sale recently, and like I know that it's been ironed out quite a bit and massaged into a workable game, and yeah, there's a couple of weird things that are just kind of consequences, I guess, of like an open world game where you're like, oh, that's a weird thing that happened. So still a little buggy, but it's definitely a lot of fun. I'm enjoying myself.
On PC?
Yeah, on PC. I also binged all the way through House of the Dragon. to get that like fantasy fix. So I like House of the Dragon possibly more than certainly like late period Game of Thrones. It's just a show about like a terrible family. Like the thing that I like about House of the Dragon is that the fantasy elements, because it takes place before Game of Thrones, like the fantasy elements are so commonplace as to be unremarkable. So like dragons, people are like, oh my god, dragons, they're so cool. Like there goes one dragon and there go multiple other dragons. And like all of the magical elements that were so wondrous, I guess, or at least they're supposed to be in Game of Thrones, just kind of recede into the background on House of the Dragon. And so subsequently, it's just like a dishy soap opera about, you know, why we shouldn't have hereditary monarchies anymore. And I really enjoy that. One of the great sins of Game of Thrones, especially in the later seasons, is that it seems like the showrunners had no respect for the fantasy elements of the fantasy series that they decided to adapt. And, you know, so all that stuff just kind of fell apart. It's one of the things that I find so upsetting, or most upsetting, about Game of Thrones in its final years.
It's like really, I mean, it's, when I look at, I think it's not an exaggeration to say that I've spent like a significant percentage of my journalism career covering Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like it's probably only 2 or 3 percentage points, but it's very real. And so that last season was just like a slap in the face of actual years that I spent.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so subsequently, like, I really enjoy House of the Dragon because it's much more of like an intimate, like, actors kind of thing where people get to, you know, the characters are occasionally broadly drawn, but like, it's just like, it's a fun chance for people to act the shit out of a fantasy drama. And so that's pretty enjoyable. Binged it real fast. Looking forward to more. So, yeah, that's what I got. That's really all I've been up to these days.
Right on.
Corey,
what else are you watching?
Me? Oh, well, I already sort of hinted at it, but Straight Story, which was the only other movie that from David Lynch that I'd never seen before. I just sort of had missed it, and it's great. I mean, I don't think this is a surprise to anybody. I think it's one of his, I think it probably is his most accessible movie. It's his only G-rated movie.
A man on a riding lawnmower,
yeah,
right?
Man on a riding lawnmower. Trip. Yeah. It's great. It's fantastic. It's on Disney Plus. So it is a Disney movie, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I mean,
his
most accessible
movie. Have you seen
Dune? I was
going
to ask about Dune.
Right.
Just like that thing.
I can't imagine a universe where Corey has Disney Plus.
Dune just opens up.
Yeah,
like,
well, let's just say it. I don't pay for it. But
okay.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I strongly recommend it. I think that if it was on this, I would be giving it a very high rating. So Straight Story is really, really good. Kind of a tragic story about the lead actor on it, but like don't read about it until after you watch the movie. And then I don't know, I watched a couple other short films that Angela had recommended on the Criterion streaming service. So I watched Warsha and Barden Me and The Face of AIDS, and I can't say I really understood what Warsha was going for. That one kind of flew past me a little bit, but I really did like, I mean, Barden Me is a kind of a documentary biography about, oh shit, I should have looked up his full name. That feels stupid for not knowing it. But he's a civil rights and queer activist who and it tells the story of him meeting the guy who's being interviewed. And sort of back in the time when they met, you know, gay marriage was not legal. And so he legally adopted him in order for them to be able to, you know, sort of share a life together and be able to, you know, live in the same apartment together and be able to, you know, pass that apartment on to him when he died and all that stuff. And I don't know, it was a good little, you know, 15-minute documentary. And then The Face of AIDS is the documentary about sort of a famous photograph of a gay activist who's dying of AIDS. And basically it's the photograph is being taken as he's dying and his grieving parents are there. And she takes this picture and then it gets like bought up by the Benetton company, the Colors of Benetton sort of ad campaign and stuff. And they do it like with permission of the family. And I guess at the time, especially, Benetton was known for like doing these, you know, photographs and, you know, shocking images that were very political in nature and stuff. But this is one of the ones that really sort of set a lot of people off, and it became a really polarizing decision on whether to feature this, you know, very sensitive picture here as part of like their like ad campaign. And Benetton's a huge multinational corporation. The Benetton family is a bunch of like rich assholes. So like, I think that anything they do is like worthless and horrible and like whatever, but feel free to form your own opinion after watching it. So I don't know. Those were a couple of good little short films that were also on the collection.
Cool.
How about you, Peter?
Well, I took myself to the movie theater, and I saw Priscilla.
Oh, cool.
I saw Sofia Coppola's newest movie, Priscilla. Mm. And I guess I don't know what I was expecting, because I really don't like biopics. And I was like, oh, shit, this is a biopic. In my head, I was like, oh, it's a Sofia Coppola movie. Yeah, glad to go. I think it was Heads and Shoulders above your normal biopic. I mean, I think Sofia Coppola is a fantastic mm-hmm. filmmaker. And this was like an interesting movie. I think it was like pretty complex and unusual in a lot of its pacing and sort of like scene choices that I'm still kind of thinking about and mulling over. I think the woman who played Priscilla, what's her name? Her name is Kaylee Spaney. She was incredible. I think like between her acting being really noteworthy and sort of like the production design, lighting and cinematography just being like incredible to watch, like every scene was just delicious, like just dripping in like overly thought through production design, lighting, just like it was just awesome to look at. And so I think between those two things, it was a fun time out in the movies. I'm not sure how successful it was. Like, I'm not sure how much I care about, you know, this, but it was like, I was glad I saw it. On the other side of the spectrum, just because Halloween's over doesn't mean I stop watching lots and lots and lots of horror movies.
Never.
But I finally saw one that I've been trying to see for a couple months, because it's had the most buzz, and that is the Argentinian film When Evil Lurks. Wizard, I'm not sure if you've heard of this one.
I've seen ads for this one. This one looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it came out of the Toronto Film Festival with tons and tons of buzz. Written, directed by Damien Rugna. I'm sure I'm saying that incorrectly. But When Evil Lurks is like, good. it's you know, whatever. It's tough to say because you think it's like a movie about mass hysteria of this in this rural sort of Argentinian town. There's a sick man, and they think his mother thinks he's possessed, and that leads other people to think that there's like possessions happening around, and it just kind of like goes places. This movie showed me three or four things I have never seen before. It was very, I would not recommend it to Angela.
I will not purposefully go see a horror movie ever.
Yeah.
Like, we're done. No. Used, ironically, all through high school and middle school, I really loved horror films. But
there are some I would recommend anymore. To you. Absolutely. This is not one of those.
We'll recommend it to Frida. How about that?
Yeah, sure. And then finally, have you heard the good news about Alan Wake 2? Because that's basically what I've been doing with my free time over the past like week and a half or so. What a fantastic video game. It's not perfect at all, but I think I read a review of it. If anyone played the first one, did you all play the
twice.
First Alan Wake? Oh, yeah.
I loved the first one.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Surprised you haven't jumped on this one. Yeah. I usually wait.
So I don't I don't normally plunk down $60-$70 for new games or whatever. I usually like wait until they go on sale for you know, 20 is like my sweet spot.
No, I liked the first one. I think I liked what it wanted to be more than I liked the game itself. And I think I like bought into that more. I think this is a far more fully realized sort of version of what it wants to be. And I think it's not perfect. I still have a little bit of gripes with it. But I was reading a review that I think set a good had a good line in it that felt like few other games released in the past decade have felt this like authored. Mm-hmm. Like it feels very much like singularly creatively driven. Mm-hmm. And I think the like environmental storytelling and just moment to moment vibe of this is so incredibly strong. I really am eating it the hell up. I think it's fucking great.
That's I'm good like to hear.
Maybe I'm, halfway
through. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think I've played all of Remedy's games. And I loved Control also. Like I played Control 2.5 times and I'll probably play it again. So I just love that.
Yeah, no, I think Control is like, the more I think about Control, I think Control is one of my favorite games of the past like decade. Mm-hmm. Easily. And where Alan Wake is disappointing me a little bit is that it does not feel as good as Control felt to play. Mm-hmm. But also I think they're different games.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's not, Alan Wake is, you know, he's what it is. And it's, yeah, and it's not like a super hardcore action game. It is mm-hmm. like more of a survival horror and stuff like that. Yeah, Angela, what else have you been watching?
I found, and this is unusual for me, an anime type thing or animated show on Netflix called The Blue Eye Samurai.
Oh, I've been thinking about picking that up. That looks fun.
And I got sucked in by the little trailery thing, or they just started playing it, and I was hanging out with my husband Chris, and it just so happened. It's very rare that Chris and I watch things together anymore because we just have such widely varying tastes. But this was amazing. The story sucked me in immediately. I didn't care about the violence in it because the story and the animation was just ridiculously gorgeous. And the characters that they created were compelling. I couldn't wait. It was one of those shows where you want to binge it, but you don't because you want to relish and enjoy every episode. So hopefully I will get on to episode 2, maybe even tonight. But
cool.
It is unexpected and absolutely stunning. And then the other thing, I watched some of the films that Corey watched. And my only real comment on them is that for me, the Warsha movie was just really about oppression and not being able to be yourself mm-hmm. at all. And that just that, you know, having to go all the way to the top of a crane to feel like you can be yourself. And then comparing that with the stuff from, say, Trisha's Wedding or, you know, imagine trying to say any of that stuff in a Muslim country. You can't mm-hmm. do that. And I just it made me. And I need stuff like this in my life. It made me appreciate being American. There are so few times that I get to appreciate. I would say Trump being elected ended any sense of patriotism whatsoever. I sometimes get a glimpse of it when I watch baseball. But knowing that oftentimes we can say the most outrageous things and show them on cinema won't necessarily land us in jail. Not right away, anyway. That's something to hold on to, and I'll take every little piece of it that I will get. But also, I watched Lord of the Rings again.
Hey.
Because it's 'tis the season. I was in my favorite place, which is Lithia Springs Resort in Ashland, Oregon, where one can sit in a hot tub in your own room and see a TV, and you can watch Lord of the Rings in a hot tub. And that is my happy place, everybody.
That's good life.
That is a great life.
Middle Earth hot tub.
Middle Earth hot tub. And actually, that town has a cafe called Oberon's, which if you really want to go full whole hog on the Tolkien, you can. And then do mushrooms in Lithia Park for the win.
Yeah.
Best vacation
sounds
ever.
Like a good time.
It really is. And I think that's our show, everybody. Next week, we are watching Inland Empire. Right, Corey?
Yeah, that's what we're watching.
Whoa.
Buckle up. It's a 3-hour film, everybody. That means next episode's going to be
a 3-hour film. Sorry.
No, you're fine. And, you know, hopefully next weekend, you know, this time we were at like 1 hour and 16 minutes. Who knows how long it'll be since we'll have a lot to talk about. Thanks again to Frida for writing in. Maybe that could be you next time. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
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 Bye.